Blog Talk Radio.
He poured the lights upon the tree and all the presents underneath. Light the fire, it's getting cold. Another year of will it snow? Mixing lager and champagne, something I'll never do again. Round the table, banter flows, praying no one rocks the boat. But I know this picture's not quite right. There's someone on your mind. First Christmas time without him by your side, I know he'll love these Christmas bells, 'cause they never say farewell. So we laugh, we shed a tear for those who can't be here. Drinking sherry just for cause, confessing all our Christmas love. Was home alone for the thousandth time, the only movie that we all like. But I know this picture's not quite right. There's someone on my mind. First Christmas time without him by our side, and though he'll hold these Christmas bells, 'cause they never say farewell. So we laugh, we shed a tear for those who can't be here.
Everybody, this is a team of Voices Radio on allpoetry.com. So if you want to follow along with us, go to allpoetry.com, get yourself onto the site, it's free to do, and go and knock on the door of a team of Voices, where at the minute you will find myself, AP Taylor, and you will find Sweet Pea. Hello, Sweet, how are you?
I am good. That was absolutely beautiful. I love that.
Isn't that a beautiful song? Isn't that a beautiful song? That is Tom Walker, who is a Scottish musician, written by Tom Walker on the guitar, and that was from the Royal Christmas Special on Christmas Eve, and it was played in Westminster Abbey and with a string quartet and a guest pianist, Sweet. And the guest pianist was none other than Catherine, the Duchess of Cambridge.
Really?
She was actually playing on that song. The future Queen of England was playing the piano. So there you go. It's in the top 20 in the United Kingdom at the minute with a bullet and heading rapidly towards number one. And it's just a brilliant song. Brilliant song. Oh, really, just a brilliant song. No two ways about it. It's great voice, but just a brilliant song.
Really? Little Kate was playing the piano. Wow. That's amazing.
The
piano. Wow. My, I have to get a copy of that. That's crazy.
You
shit.
Should. Isn't it?
I will. I'm a big royal follower of Kate and William.
I that, or otherwise I would have, you know, that was a perfect spot there, you know. But they, well, everybody knew that Kate did a little bit of piano. You know, she had grade 3 and grade 4, but nobody was expecting her to step up to the grand piano and do that. Yeah.
No, that's yes, I'm a big, my sister-in-law and I are a big follower of the Little Royals. We have a goal for the Queen and Mom to do 175. That's our big goal. We want to see her do that.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Reign
for 75 years and
100
years old.
If I'd known that, I wouldn't have had a problem pulling that song out. Sweet. But no, I've loved that song ever since I heard it, just because it's a great song. But sort of find it fun, really. But it's got that
beautiful
royal
song.
Connection, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, 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 really like it. So anyway, there you go. So we have this little episode of Sweetened Hour, and we are here because, well, let's face it, nobody else is. Sweet. You know, we've got people knocked over the front and center. We're the last people standing, you know. It's like...
we are.
What do they call it? It's like the 7-10 spare in bowling. You know, we're both sort of at either end of the sort of alley, and one time in 750,000, you'll actually knock it over. You know, I mean, so you know, we're still here.
Yes, the oddities. Oh my goodness! So I've got, speaking of the odds and things. So here in the United States, the great states of America, we are.
Yes.
They are, companies are running to make policy, and I know you do a lot of operations and you run businesses across the country, and you know that I am in HR and I work with a lot of policies. And so we've come to this thing where companies are writing policy, just burning the pages of writing this new policy that you are mandated to get your COVID vaccine. And I had some calls come in today, and my company is telling me I have to get this vaccine, or I have to be tested. Sometimes, like every 10 days, they're wanting a test.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it now is in several places in our country almost mandated that it is condition of employment. What's going on in the rest of the world?
Yes. Well, it's a very interesting smorgasbord of things, and it depends on state by state here in Australia. So Victoria, where I am, they've basically mandated that a third of the workforce need to be vaccinated, and that third of the workforce are those people who are considered to be emergency workers or those people who are necessary to keep things going. So there's not a lot of, you know, it's actually legislated. It is where it is really here in Victoria.
Yeah, and we've just come out and said private companies, offices, just your general basic office people are mandated to have vaccines. If it's kind of, you know, I'm kind of wondering how that's going to be challenged in the near future, you know.
Oh, it will be challenged. There's no doubt about that. Sweet.
Absolutely.
There's nothing surer about that, but it's just a matter of how it all plays out. I mean, I suspect the challenge process is going to take a couple of years, if I had to guess.
Right. It's like mandating, you know. But then again, you know, if we're going to be in close quarters and it's getting to the point where, you know, you made me sick, which is going to be the bigger lawsuit. You didn't protect me, or you're overprotecting me.
Well, yeah, that's the difficulty, isn't it? Because you sort of, whichever way you turn on this one, there's a sort of lawsuit around the corner, isn't there? There's the do you try and mandate getting everybody to have the vaccine, and then people say, well, look, I'm going to take you to court because you know you've infringed my rights, or do you say, no, well, we're not going to do that. We're going to follow a path of testing, and then somebody gets sick from somebody else in the office, and then there's a lawsuit that says you haven't provided a safe workplace. So there's sort of no, you know, there's no simple or easy path here for anybody, unfortunately.
Is it an OSHA violation if you don't vaccinate your employees?
Bureaucrats. It's one of those sort of classic sort of, you know, if you're a business person, what you do in this circumstance is you give it to the board and you say, well, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do. So you as a board make up your mind, and then it's your responsibility whenever it goes off the rails, which it will.
There you go.
But this is a classic, you know, as I said, if you're a head of a business, you don't make a decision on this one. You throw it upstairs and get people who are more confused than you to make a decision. But then once they've made that decision, it's theirs, you know. So that's what's happening here with me at the minute.
Yes, it's definitely an interesting decision to make. But then you have, you know, I don't know. I mean, our workforce, our labor force is just a joke right now. I mean, you got so many people getting terminated because they won't vaccinate, and then you got the other half of them that won't. They don't want to work because of, you know, they're afraid of getting sick. So we're definitely in a conundrum right now. It's a very interesting world we're living in.
And certain areas of certain jobs have gone mad in terms of salaries too. So IT roles, basic IT roles, have gone bananas. And the demand is there. Security roles in IT, just crazy, crazy stuff. And you know, what used to happen was that all of this used to get the lid kept on it because people would go, well, that's okay, I'll just outsource it to another country like India or Sri Lanka or the Philippines. But the problem there is that they're running into exactly the same issues. And good technicians in India have had salary rises of up to 35% in the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I don't do anything for money. I'm all pro bono, if and when I can do.
No, well, I do stuff for money, but I have to say that there is a slight kink to that, so to speak, and that is that all of the businesses that I represent are member-owned. And so they're not for-profit. They're sort of not for-profit for members, if that makes sense. What I call not for very much profit is the way I describe it. Because you've got to make profit because you've got to, you know, reinvest in the business and put computers in and put people in and do all that sort of stuff. But you can't, you're not there to make shirtloads of to create a dividend. And so that's the difference for businesses I look after, their member-based or cooperatives. So not quite as sort of, you know, go down the street and, you know, raise every last cent that you possibly can as other types of businesses, I hope.
We have poetry, so
we should probably do a few of those, I think.
I agree.
And why don't I pick the first one off the board, which is Solstice Night, and read that, and then you can do the next. That's that. We'll sort of take it in turns. I think.
That'll work.
Put this one up on the board. I've got a new one, by the way. I'll see what you think of that too. In a tick. So this is Solstice Night by Iris 3, and it goes a little bit like this. Winter's blustery breath has stripped the land of its pillowy greenness. Brown cake mud peeks out through hazel-tinted grass, fraying and yet still striving to blanket each rocky grain of ochre sand from erosion by the gales. A leafless oak stands tall, extending frazzled underarms to pierce the sky's netted pewter patina. his dry skeletal limbs stretching to cradled solstice, full moons, amber glowing warmth. He whispers of his chapped body, how it tells that winter's freeze will soon bring his end. The citrine moon comforts him, speaking of how she has witnessed millions of winters and knows that each winter passes to let in springtime's inflorescence, and of how her own face will now start waning thin, to a crescent thinner than a grass blade, but will grow again to an orb of polished buttery softness. The oak regains strength, caressed in lunar susurrations, remembering her words, "Winter will pass," in poem.
Well, that's beautiful.
Isn't that nice?
Yes, it is. Very nice. I like Iris. And actually, I kind of think this is a little different for her.
Him.
I mean him. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm thinking Iris Rose. Yeah. Sorry, him. It's very, very interesting. And Goldmer. And bronze, or honorable mention winner.
Yes.
Definitely went all the way around. It's very vivid. I like the imagery. It's like right there. You can feel where he's at.
Lovely use of words. Really strong use of words.
Yes, absolutely. Very, very vivid.
And I love the use of colors. Yes.
Very much so.
Yes.
Winter
yes, and lunar susurration. It's a very nice use of vocabulary, but also, as I said, just the lovely sense of optimism at the end. But quite apart from that, just the citrine and amber and buttery and some beautiful use of just colours thrown in, which is nice. Deb would approve.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I really did enjoy that.
I agree.
All right.
I agree.
All right, we're good.
Now.
Two for two, we agree.
Did you want to put one of yours in sweet now? Like up front?
I can do that. I can do that. Yes, I can.
Even better.
I do, yeah. Let's see, we can do this one. I've got poems that I haven't been reading. I've been writing quite a bit, which is odd. But let's see if we can do this. And then you can throw one up, and then I can read one from the board.
Perfect. Yeah.
So here we go.
It's a
wee bit of something. Enchantment keeps you warm in the lemon-scented dewdrop sun. Playing in the waterfalls of leafy caverns, between the realms of fairies and humans. Pure intent perched on a cloud of mischief sits with a grin, waiting to play tricks on men for his amusement. A broken wagon wheel, a pig that squeals, a damsel in distress, a giggle for him, a legend for generations to ponder. Life's thirst coiled and tight spring open, in the light of imagination, as children and fairies giggle among orange marigolds, play hide-and-go-seek in between rows of summer wheat, and tell stories of old in fields of bright yellow sunflowers, bracketed by blessings of Irish folklore and songs of warriors. There is blood and pride in the land, skin in the game, of the myths and legends, a show of strength, as we fight fist to fist, don't mess with a stout, or touch a lass, she'll kick your ass. End poem.
Well, there you go. You know where you stand then, don't you?
Right.
Particularly
yes,
if you touch a lass, you know where you're going to be. But I actually enjoyed when between the realms of fairies and humans, and then there was a lovely line, pure intent perched on a cloud of mischief sits with a grin. Isn't that lovely? You could use that as a prompt for a competition. It's just got something about it. And And then waiting to play tricks on men for his amusement is kind of fun, but I like that it sits on a cloud of mischief and sits with a grin, sort of interesting and sort of neat of its own accord, that it sort of sits there and is sort of observing, something about that. So I really like that play. I thought that was clever.
The first couple of words, the first couple of words of each stanza was the prompt for the contest. So enchantment keeps pure intent, life's thirst, and bracketed by.
Yeah. Okay.
Were the you had to start those stanzas, but they very interesting. You didn't have to.
Really
you could
well
put them in any order you wanted.
Well, I had no idea that that's what was going on. So you've done a very, very great job if that's the case, because you can pick those, you know, because you can see the juxtaposition of the two styles. But it was very, very, very neat. So I'm more impressed now.
Well, thank you. Yes, it was a fun contest. I don't usually do contests, but this one kind of intrigued me, and I went, well, let's see what I can do with that. So
there's nothing wrong about being intrigued, and in fact, it's exactly what happened with me this morning, because I went onto the site and I saw that the Dylan Thomas poem, the very famous Dylan Thomas Villanelle, was there, which is "Do Not Go Gently Into the Night," which is one of the most famous sort of Villanelles. And so I thought to myself, that's kind of interesting, you know, because most people do go gently into the night. Most people don't. Most people do the opposite to the Dylan Thomas poem, but I've never sort of heard anything that sort of tries to pick that up anywhere. So this is what I wrote this morning. This is "Go They Gently," a Villanelle, in response to Dylan Thomas. And it goes a little bit like this. Upon a calm presence, pens glaze, years of pages gathered on table, mourn friends of their signature graves. Into darkness quietude ways, words of spring rain lightly sable. Upon a calm presence, pens glaze. These good folk shimmered through dark days, deeds and substance and truth from Babel, mourn friends of their signature graves. Who filtered sunlight from the graves, observers of strength past label. Upon a calm presence, pens glaze. Near to death their maker will praise, followed words to deeds as able, mourn friends as their signature grows. While people gather and their eyes raise, your great grace abiding stable, upon a calm presence pens glaze, mourn friends as their signature grows. In poem.
Well, it's definitely a stunning rite that takes pardon the pun, but a grave, you know, outlook and makes it gentle. It's not so harsh or seeming. I mean, near to death, praise, followed words, deeds as able, mourn friends as their signature graves. I like how, you know, you weave that in, you know, from grave to grave to grave situations. I thought it was very, very interesting, and yet you make it lovely. Because it is something that's going to happen to us all.
Yeah, and I, as I said, the Dylan Thomas poem, it's a very famous poem, and it talks about sort of this sort of anger and ferocity and fierceness.
Uh-huh.
You know, do not go into the good night and all that stuff. And I sort of thought to myself, well, that's fine, and that probably relates to about one person in 20. You know, most people don't go ferociously. They do what they do quietly and gently, and then they sort of just shimmer away.
It's kind of, yours is more like a lullaby.
It is a little bit. It is a little bit.
It's kind of like a gentle.
That was my sort of thinking. You know, I sort of thought, well, Dylan Thomas, as I said, really famous poem, wonderful poem, beautifully written. And you know, no, writing a villanelle is never easy. It just sort of seemed as if it sort of didn't relate to the vast majority of people. And I just sort of thought, well, I can do something about that. So that was my thinking. So strange story.
No, I like your strange thoughts, but
I have lots of them. You know, there's no doubt. I have a lot of strange thoughts. So the next one up on the board is from Irish Rose. Did you want to read that one for us?
I can do that. I can definitely do that.
I'll put that up on the board. Yeah, here we go.
All right.
Up on the board now, this is Change by Irish Rose.
Change, okay. Change, is it a noun or a verb, depending on what my day may be? It can be quite a serious thing, or simply a pain, nagging feeling. Or it can be camouflaged in words, forested, brazenly, and bountiful, seeming glee, that defy transmute thoughts, flying, amending, and meeting, mutating wordscapes within me. Often it's simply raw truth, revealing what I need to see, looking, prodding, peering, deeply feeling, change, permeating me. In
That's true. Interesting enough. The prompt is, please write about the one thing you've always wanted to change about yourself, which is an interesting prompt for a write. I kind of like change, Sweet. I sort of get bored without change. And so I don't know whether that makes me unusual, but I like the idea of change and things changing around me and things being different and contrasting things. And so I kind of like that change can be serious or a bit of a nagging feeling. And because the thing about change is that some of it's right in front of you and some of it's happening, but you don't sort of see it until it's appeared. And so it's an interesting write because it sort of looks at change from a couple of different angles and directions. So I quite enjoyed it. What did you think, Sweet?
Well, I am one of those believers that the only reliable thing we have in life is change. It's a rock.
Yeah. But for a lot of people, it's a real concern. Change. It really is. Anyway, there you go. So I am having a look at the next couple of poems, and I'm just wondering whether I might do Frank's next, and then get you to do Deb's. How's that?
Well, I think we have an audio for Frank and Morrison.
Oh, do we? Oh, perfect.
Yes.
That's even better.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me just go up there. So, oh, we do, too. We've got an audio for.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
We've got... Well, we've got Frank there, so we might put Frank's on now. Why not? And I'm very glad that we've got a SoundCloud for
and
it.
And then ORS
he,
is...
Yeah, okay.
Morrison.
Let's do Frank now, because he always performs his stuff better than I can. So here we go. This is Frank and his piece, which I've just put on the board, which is Chimes of the Phantom Bells. Here we go now.
A somber mist of profound sorrow prevails over a gloom of the bosom of dying flowers, covered in a despair of droplets of acid tears, and the radiant sun hides from a darkness. A burning poison from the thick thorns pours into the garden of dried-up fountains, once displaying beautiful crystalline waters, now scarlet petals bleeding in charcoal ashes. Ravens gather along the churchyard trees to hear a loud intonation of iron bells, resound melodies of a horrid tale of winter, awakening a slumbering phantom of the belfry. The wedding bells that rang notes of love, with a blissful rapture of two forlorn lovers, sound the rusty chimes of an untimely death, and a daunting alarm roars through the town. It is said by kinsfolk that at Christmas night they can hear the shrieks and the weeping from the shadowy bride of a Gothic tower who roams in search for her devoted groom. Under the guise of a pale-faced moon, you see her sad and gaunt apparition there, with the melancholy of a muffled monotone after horrible chimes of the phantom bells.
God. Oh.
Do you hear the weeping? Listen closely. You can hear the weeping.
There you go. That's right.
Well, there you go. That's right.
You had the full Vincent Price laugh with the Edgar Allan Poe bells as well. You had to wait until the whole thing chimed its way through. It was quite a production, Frank. Well done.
Very much so. He is quite the man. He does write those unique poems that can set your hair on end and laugh you all
yes.
the way to the insane asylum. I'll tell you what.
Yes. Yes. I'm with you all the way. Yes. So, oh, well. Yes, but look, somebody's got to do that. I can still remember early on in my time in oral poetry where I decided to write some dark poems, and I went into a couple of dark competitions, and I was scared enough by the usernames, much less by the poems I had. And so, you know, I sort of worked out that, you know, dark poetry and I were sort of probably, you know, distant cousins. And I've written the odd dark poem, but nothing like, you know, what I can see on the site and nothing like the sort of imagery and vividness that Frank can pull out from a piece, you know, it's just not my scene, sweet. I wish it was, but it's not. So there you go.
Yeah, I understand that. I do enjoy it, though.
Yeah. I do. Well, we have to understand what we're good at and what we're not, and that's where Frank's at. So, okay. So on the board now, we've got a SoundCloud for RS Morris too. From what I saw a minute ago. But we don't have a SoundCloud for Deb, do we?
No, we do not.
So did you want to read Deb's piece, Naked Silence is Emotional to See?
I can do that.
Okay. Well, let me throw that up on the board.
right.
Thank you, Doc. It's up on the board now.
Maybe I can do that. I can get back to all poetry. Okay, there I am. Okay, Deborah. Naked Silence is a Motionless Sea by Deborah Lee. Two conch shells lay on the wet sand by the giant horseshoe crab that shifts. But his eyelashes fall weight lifting sleep. His face flashes on the lids and brain drifts. Palm disperses the cold bed sheets with moonlight dripping as sunlight. Silence screams throughout the cottage. Spotlight, my loneliness in display. Sweet golf songs tug me from my sleep. Outside the windows, the sky wears gray. From thick mist that blocks the sunshine, masking every goldenrod tangerine ray. A tugboat's horn blasts from the horizon, just as two blue whale blowholes spray. Dawn's air flows, kissed by the crisp chill, as the salty ocean waves nap today. No white foam caps roll over the shore to clap and slap over the edge of the bay, and no keys click in the door's deadbolt.
Now, isn't that nice? I like the that sense of silence in the last couple of lines there. So the you've got the waves which clap and slap and provide that to the background, but no key clicks in the door's deadbolt or footsteps walk to me down the hallway. But sort of there's a sort of loneliness to that.
Yeah, I kind of found it haunting, the whole thing. Like even the sea couldn't raise itself to, you know, have any waves. It was even so calm that, you know, it even couldn't wave. I thought that was kind of a unique metaphor, imagery within itself, that, you know, you couldn't even get the silent little laps of a wave. So I really enjoyed that.
I like the little bits always. I mean, I like the conch shells because that's a nice place to start to sort of kick it off. But the tugboats with the whales, there's something kind of neat about that sort of juxtaposition of the two. I don't know why it appeals to me, but it does. So it's just a lovely descriptive sort of write, really.
I love the colours as usual.
So,
beautifully done.
I've only got a couple more poems on the board, but I'm going to grab one more of mine, and I suspect you probably should grab another one of yours as well.
Okay.
I did one earlier in the week, and the thing I liked about this poem was its rhyming, and its flow. So, sort of, you know, rhyming plus plus. So this is called Southern Cross, and it goes a little bit like this. Sands they did curl ochre red until skies filled with star bands, and his smile widely spread as the light danced in strands. Butter moon and nebula blue danced across heavens to stutter, utter reverence to dreaming too in the night's far distant clutter. Pole five orbs, Southern Cross, guiding a path to a distant knoll, toll the rusting windmills across the fields of desert, my whole. Glove of creation loops hope by those spirits held sick love. Above forefathers do elope with hopes and dreams thereof. Afar and near these skies tie a bright promise of who we are. Far on the way, Christmas nigh, drawn beyond wishes to stars. End point.
That's just stunningly beautiful. And I really like that it brings like such a higher thought to Christmas and a higher thought of beauty. I really, really enjoyed the last stanza, bright promise of who we are. Far am I away, Christmas nigh, drawn beyond wishes to stars. The sense of looking beyond, you know, just what the wishes are and the gifts and everything, but bringing your eyes to the great star and the northern star and all of that. I thought this was just really pretty. Very well, very well.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just a really interesting set of sort of rhyme patterns in it, which make it flow really well. So you've got the first line, third line rhyming, as well as the end of the second and fourth, and then you've got the first and third with another rhyme rhyming, and so it's sort of got every stanza's got six rhyming words in it, four of the primary and two of the second, and it just gives you that lovely sort of flow when it works. And so, I just really liked the rhyme pattern. That's why I shared it. So, there you go.
I love how you always talk. You talk so technical about your poems. I'm just like, I fall in love with your poem.
That was a sort of test run at doing probably what will be a bigger poem. In the way that sort of artists put together a little sketch and then sort of come back and do something bigger on the same theme. That was sort of one for me on that. I know I'll go back and do a poem that looks a lot like that, but is probably bigger and sort of more vivid in how it's going to transpose. But I think I'll use the same rhyming pattern there, because I really enjoyed that rhyming pattern. I might shorten a couple of words here and there, but I like to have little test runs sometimes.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one a lot because of that. Let's see which one do I like. I like this one.
Liking is a very, very good reason to put it in.
Yeah. I do like this one. I don't know why I like this one. I just do. I think it's whimsical. So when
I like whimsical.
It's got no.
I like.
Yeah, I do. I like the whimsical. It's got no fancy form to it, I don't think, anyway. It's just whimsical.
Okay.
And it was Christmas, my beautiful grandson was playing with one, and I kind of took it more to a twisty little thing. So
yeah,
it was about being a perfectionist, so that's what I went towards, because that's what I am. It's called Coloring Books. Lawns in shades of green, clouds colored white, yellow-haired girls with pigtails, blue eyes shining bright. Bricks outlined in black and colored in with red, a dog always the brown crayon, and the house the color of my mood. No marks outside the lines, control was expected. Refrigerator space was reserved for excellence. Seeds planted for a three-year-old perfectionist. And poem. Well, maybe that's a whimsical.
And so, it is whimsical. I think I said when I saw this just after you wrote it, if you recall, and I was trying to make out, you know, why the owl was more coloured in than the car, which was less coloured in than the rose and less than the robot, and far less coloured in than the
spider. Yes, I remember that.
If you remember. But.
Yes, I do.
But I think it is interesting because the refrigerator space was at a premium in our house as well. And it is interesting because that was the place that you knew that you'd made it when you got on the refrigerator. And there was something
hanging wall, you know. And so it took on an importance in our house that it sounds like it did in yours, where the best things appeared on the fridge. And what that did was that you tried to push yourself even more to do better things, because then it would appear on the fridge more often and your siblings wouldn't. But it was interesting because I had the world view from about the age of 2 or 3 that I actually couldn't. I had no artistic ability. That was my world view, and that I could write a little, but I certainly couldn't draw or illustrate or do anything like that. And so my times on the fridge were very limited. I've got to say, because my sister was there most of the time, you know, with what her artistic endeavours were, and whatever I did were very much in the shade of what she did. So, and we've all got our, you know, things we're good at and things that we're not good at. But being on the fridge was never one of my things that I was good at. So, you move on and you get over these things. But I was on stages and stuff like that instead. So I don't think I've told you. Did I tell you about my being on stage and stuff, Sweet? I think I did. Where I was Oliver and Oliver and Lion in The Wizard of Oz. And then we had the Midsummer Night's Dream. We had Midsummer Night's Dream. And my voice was breaking. So every single time I opened my voice, I wasn't sure if it was going up or down, which is never a fun place to be. And I was one of the young lovers, which was probably appropriate because I didn't have many lines. I was Demetrius. And a new kid had come in and they played Puck, and of course Puck's the main character, yeah, in A Midsummer Night's Dream, and this guy just blew everybody else off the stage. You know, it's like he was the play and the rest of us were just there to sort of ornament the sort of side curtains, and he'd come over from New Zealand first year in the school, and as it happened he did want to go on and become an actor. That was what he wanted to do with his life. And lo and behold, that's what he did. So his name is Ben Mendelsohn. He's had a number of roles in big productions, including as the main nasty character in one of the Star Wars spin-offs. He's quite a famous actor, actually, here in Australia. So... But yeah, he just was so much better than all of us. It wasn't worth talking about, really. He just completely smacked us. So anyway, there you go. So we have a piece up on the board by Upper S Suite. So that is, I think I put it up there now. That's Papa Cutter, Wildcat Lily, and a Heavy Horse Head Hitching Post. So
all right,
I'm hoping. Is the sound recording of it. Here we go.
In the 1800s, cowboys rode trails. They were like roads of today. Along these trails were saloons, had hitching posts for horses to stay. St. Louis had quite the history, early settlers and their Indian fears, Western fur trade, typhoid fever, Louisiana Purchase, and Trail of Tears. Two people stood out among others, legends all of St. Louis would boast, Papa Carter and Wildcat Lily, and a heavy horsehead hitching post. Was a saloon once owned by Billy, famous for its bourbon and hot chili, had soiled doves and three-card Monte, and a dancing girl named Wildcat Lily. Papa Carter had a favorite hitching post, tied his horse to it every day. If another cowboy roped up there, would find his horse had run away. Papa drank at Billy's for years. The hitching post now had his mark. They finally placed his name on it. No other horses were allowed to park. The town was just growing too big. Billy's saloon falling into disrepair. New railroad tracks were being laid. Beer halls popping up everywhere. Papa Carter hatched a plan to take the hitching post from Billy. His favorite tie-up would be his. He needed the help of Wildcat Lily. Kind of crude by today's standards. As plans go, there may be doubts. Simply ride in after Billy closed. Just dig it up and hightail it out. Papa Carter rode in at midnight. Wildcat Lily was to be the scout. Papa started digging and digging. Was way too heavy, he soon found out. They drug it behind his horse for many miles and most of the night. The post they hid behind bushes would come back and get it at first light. Loaded onto a horse and buggy, Papa Carter, the post, and Wildcat Lily finally had the two things he wanted from the saloon that was owned by Billy. Papa Carter and Wildcat Lily soon embarked on a new career, combined their favorite pastime, invented a drink, called it Billy Beer. The heavy horsehead hitching post became the new mascot for Billy Beer. As famous as Papa Carter and Wildcat Lily, had its own holiday celebrated every year. Her real name was Stell, but we won't tell. But there's one thing St. Louis still boasts, the legend of Papa Carter and Wildcat Lily and a heavy horsehead hitching post.
There's something about a piece that actually goes through and lays out a legend for you, sweet, and this lays out a legend for you. So, isn't that cool? What did you think?
I've always really liked him. I love the way he just tells a story. I always have. I think that he is just someone that has the ability to tell us something in a really, really great way. He's always had that ability. And I love the way he just kind of brings us there. His detail, his imagery, everything that he's always done. I really, really enjoy that. So,
I agree.
There you go. Another great story from him.
Yeah, I agree with the comment about the music track too. Anything that has a harmonica in it, it grabs me every time. So just something about a harmonica. I don't know what it is, but there you go. Okie doke. Well, we have, I think, one more up on the board, sweet, which is in James. So I might grab that and read that, and then we've probably got a show, I reckon, almost.
I guess
we do. So here we go. This is In This Land Called Surreal by Ian James, and it goes a little bit like this. Death Rise Underneath, the patient fossil of a swallow piece cork cage, where sunshine seems to drip looking like flashlights in silver lining of sanguine sky. Seaweed plasma draped across humans swimming like fish through rainbow tides. His still life wings twitch in the rush of sweetbriar winds, doubled by a storm's near garbage pulse. Mud tarts are tossed onto ground, onto spick and span corpse, old tarpaulin stains. Their kingdom comes, as it is in heaven, beyond night's twilight grooves. I still stand in a strict midnight pose, upon the spinal column of chestnut oak shadow. My sweet honeysuckle fingers stray across pretty little roses, all in a line, above pink roots in false fruit of moonshine nearby. Brookline rivers deceased. The tall crop circles of bowing daisies painting placebo bones, while little black doves fly high before hope morrows. Rust yellow on skin gold, softly silky twirls from burning cocoons of pearl white lace and war-torn silk. End poem.
Wow. Another stunning in-depth look at life from Joe.
Yes. Yes. Well, Joe chooses her words very carefully, and she rewrites and rewrites and rewrites until she gets to a point where she's happy with it. She has a wonderful vocabulary, and so she's able to put items together and link thoughts that you wouldn't otherwise think could be linked. It's really interesting.
Absolutely. And that's another beautiful, beautiful one that she did.
Yeah.
And so I just can't write that eloquently. And she seems to manage to do it every single time.
I think she takes a lot of time and effort to actually find that eloquence, to be honest, having spoken to her a bit. She works really hard to get that flow and juxtaposition of words. I think she's very well known for it, but she works for it too. So it's a really interesting poetic style, and it just depends on which piece that you look at as to how whether they're surreal or whether they're not surreal or whether they're somewhere in between. And so she writes in a really interesting way where there's always truths that lie within her writing. It's just a matter of how well disguised they are.
All right, Mr. AP. It looks like you have done.
Sorry?
I said it looks like you have done a fabulous show.
We've got a caller.
We do.
We've been waiting on forever. Hello, 96. Hello, how are you?
I'm muted. Hi, guys.
It's Hatter.
Oh, I'm sorry, Hatter. I didn't know that you were coming along. I just sort of thought, well, it's just going to be two of us, and then, I'll just keep on talking and as I do. And
that's
all right. And so, we need to be Hatter.
I'm sorry, say it again. You broke up.
We missed you, Hatter. No, I said we missed
you.
It's
always, we have
always
missed
you. Hear you. So we were going to close up the show, but we can't now without you putting one of your poems on the board. I'm very happy to read it to you, by the way. Very happy to be your eyes.
Okay.
If you want to choose one.
Just take me a second.
No, of course, of course, of course. Now, I'm assuming, Hatter, that we're not going to do the show tomorrow because Deb is not very well still, although
I'm
with her today, and she is a lot better than she was days ago. And I know that you're not very well either still, so we're not going to do the show tomorrow, so won't be a show tomorrow. But if Deb's not well enough to do her Monday show, I probably will do it for her, I think. So there will be a Monday show. It'll either be Deb or it'll be me, because we already have a whole heap of poems on the board. There will be a Monday show. There won't be a Sunday show, a Saturday night show, but there will be the Deb's normal Monday show. So whether it's Deb or whether it's me is to be determined, but we will have a Monday show. There's not one tomorrow.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
Yeah, I'm posting it right now. Put it up.
It's a brilliant thing. Thank you. So, and I will I will read it for you, Hatter, I'm guessing, in the current circumstances. So once I see it there, I will... It just takes a little while to get to this part of the world because obviously we're half a planet away from south and north. But here we go now. It's up there now. This is turning yellows to grey. And it goes a little bit like this. Watching the winds as they passed around, paddle pushed and strained mutiny the sounds. Passages spoken from a prophet's tongue, depressing visions teaching their young. Wading in whiskey on a crawl to the drain, cashing in puddles filled with lost change. Wishing in wells so the spirit can tell, they gather in circles to pray. Trolling the vision to make decisions, turning the yellows to grey. Halos in spring, trespass in dreams, thinking you're all alone. Hearing what was only because they are bound to be written in stone, in part.
Wow, Heather.
That's pretty good.
I think I read that okay.
Pretty dang good, yeah.
You got that okay. What do you want to say about Hatter's piece from a few years ago now, turning yellows to grey?
Well, once again, Hatter is always Hatter, and he astounds me. And that's pretty much all I can say. He can turn my yellows to grey or my greys to yellow. It's just a beautiful piece, Hatter.
Yeah, it's when the light goes away, yellows turn grey.
Exactly do. And in fact, you know, most colours turn to grey when the light goes away. And so that's the sort of nice thing about this piece, Hatter, that sort of sense. Of light and that sort of sense of the start of the poem and then when it finishes, hearing what was only because they were bound to be written home. And so things go from certain to far less certain. And that's why I'm confident you've got yellow turning to grey. So very, very neat. And you're feeling okay, Adam?
I'm sorry?
You're feeling okay?
I thought I was feeling better a little while ago. I'm fading fast.
Yeah.
I just feel weak. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I get completely over it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got up out of bed for a little while.
So am I. And
what's that?
We're just glad you got out of bed for a little while for us, Hatter. It's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can't. One other thing. I can't believe it. One other thing,
yeah.
Man.
Wow. You know, it's a start, Hatter. You know, one thing builds to another, and at least you're able to get yourself to the phone and call, which is a really positive thing. So, you know.
Life for quite a while now has decided it's going to declare war and throw a bunch of crap at me. It's not going to win. I can take it off. Bring it on, man.
Well, exactly right. You just one battle at a time, Hatter. Just grab them one battle at a time. So, and I've just got to say, you know, there's a lot of people that we know who are unwell. I mean, Hatter, obviously, among them, Deb, has been very unwell and hopefully is getting better as we speak. And a pretty bird's been unwell. So just lots of people have not been well in themselves. And so we just wish a good health to all and a quick and rapid improvement in health for all of those people. And we won't see you on the radio tomorrow night, but we will see you on Monday for Deb's show, if it's Deb or me, either way. I'd like to thank Hatter for calling in. I'd like to thank Sweet for joining me for this quick little run of Sweet and Dour. I think it's been fun. And thanks to everybody for participating. It's been good fun.
Yeah. And if you get a chance,
thanks,
I think there's a show,
thanks,
a secret show on Sunday. You're welcome.
Sweet. When's our show?
Well, I think Sunday there might be a little secret show if you're up for it. And then when you get better, we'll talk about it.
What are we doing? When's your birthday?
Sunday night.
Sunday.
There you go. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Sunday night, and there's a little naughty show. Yeah.
Noted.
It's a naughty show.
Okay.
It's not a naughty show,
noted.
Yeah, Sunday night.
So you know that. I only need to say notice once. Oh, it's been noted. So I've said noted twice now. Okay. Okay. Sunday is Luke's birthday. Right. Okay. We'll just have to put that into the thing and smoke it. We'll see what that comes to. Okay.
Yeah.
So, as I said, no show tomorrow night. We'll do that when Deb is well and Hatter is a lot better. There's a secret show on Sunday, but then Deb's show on Monday will be on, and so we'll go from there.
Right.
What time is it on
there? We go.
Sunday.
I think it's at 10 o'clock. Yeah, I think it's 10. Eastern Standard Time,
okay, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
At 7 o'clock.
Well.
Yeah.
With all of that, everybody, the studio, since we've run a little bit over time, not too far, but a little bit over time, and we'll see everybody in a couple of days.
All right.
Good talking to you,
guys. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for calling in. Good night, everybody. Bye.
Yeah,
good night. Bye.